as you have helped him begin the drive, I would say, to create a Bilalian university. That idea, I believe, is a key that will open many doors for our people, the Bilalian people. I feel that if, and I shouldn't say if, I should say when a Bilalian university is formed, created for us, and we'll begin to move in to that area of leadership that will result in all of the other of our serious problems being solved. Now, I'm one that believes truly that education is the answer. When people have problems living with each other, problems living with themselves, problems of sustaining themselves, progressing their society, it is because of need for education. There is the absence of knowledge, or the absence of education that they need to pull themselves out of their predicament. Now, it is my hope that we assume responsibility for directing the learning of the people, not just our people, but all the people. I don't think that we should feel that this is an unreasonable thing that I'm asking, wishing for. The present system of education, as you know, has many, many serious problems, or is faced with many, many serious problems. The headline of the Sun-Times paper, I believe, was just yesterday or two days ago. It carried the caption, said that things are improving at the reading level is being raised in the public schools. How widely this is to be applied, I don't know. We don't know if that's just a few selected schools, a few isolated schools, or if this is a general case that the reading levels are being raised all throughout the public school system. I don't believe it. I haven't seen any great change in the children, so I don't believe it. Whenever the people get restless, the political establishment began feeding the people things to quiet them. And they know one of the things that are alarming many parents is the fact that we send our children to these public schools and they come out with high school diplomas and can't read.
That's right.
So I don't believe that the report should be really taken as news of a solution, that they have found a solution to the problem. They haven't found a solution to the problem.
That's right.
The problem is still there. And the problem is not just teaching children to read. The problem is correcting the minds of adults. If you've got adults teaching children who have problems themselves that are characteristic of youngsters, adolescents, then you're going to have poor performance. And that's the real problem. The problem is most of these teachers that we have in these public schools, they are not going there to teach children. They're going there to earn enough money to splurge on Friday night, Saturday night. They don't know how to manage their affairs. They don't know how to manage their life. So they have to really be redeemed before they can be really productive as teachers. And I believe that the only ones who are in the position have the germ of faith and inspiration to redeem the system are right here in this community and among the Medallions who have been working with the problem for a long time and understand it and really want to do something about it. It's the people who have been fathers from the problem who are the ones who can do something about the problem. Those people who've been a part of the problem, they're creating the problem, they're not the ones that's going to solve the problem.
That's right.
But it's those people who have felt the problem the most but have been the fathers from the problem. That is, fathers from involvement, direct involvement in it. So we have people who have been kept on the outside. We have been the fathers from the involvement in it. And we are not crippled by guilt complexes. We don't have a share in the creating the problem. They created the problem for us. They didn't permit us to come into it. The few outstanding educators of the Medallion people that we can point to don't represent a real influence in the forming and the direction and the directing of the educational process. We don't represent a real influence in that. So we don't share the guilt. But those Caucasians and others who've really been a part of creating the system and designing the direction, those people feel guilty. Guilt is one of the things that act negatively on them, and the other thing is pride. They hate to admit that they were wrong. They hate to admit that the idea was a bad one. They don't want to say that we planned, we studied and we planned and we protected these ideas for all of these generations, and now they are useless, they are worthless. They want to protect something. So you have a lot of personal things and feelings involved. They'll see what they should do, but they won't do it. They'll reject something that is personally affecting them in a bad way, but they'll protect all the rest of the crap that's affecting all of us in a bad way, you see. And this is because those people have been so involved in creating this thing until their sentimental attachment to it and pride. Democracy. They don't want to tamper with that. And a lot of other precious concepts. They don't want to tamper with it. They don't want to make repairs on it. This is sacred. We're not supposed to alter anything. But for the sake of progressing the society, saving the society from a lot of unnecessary misery that we're living with daily as parents, as students, they should see the human mind, the need to advance the intelligence of the society as being more sacred than those old ideas and concepts that we've been trained to protect. I'm not suggesting that we put aside democratic concepts, the concept of democracy, democratic concepts and procedures, our ways of doing things, methods. I'm only suggesting that we question everything. The most sacred things, we should question them. And we are not going to get this kind of effort from those people who are now in charge of things. It would have to come from people who are not in charge of things. We are not in charge of things. We don't owe anybody anything. I hope you don't. Maybe you're tied in. You know, sometimes we get tied in before we... we're tied in before we can even do anything. But I hope you're not that tied in. And I know many of us are not. I, for one, am not. I don't owe anything to anybody but Allah and goodness. Outside of God and goodness, I don't feel like I'm indebted to anybody or anything. I would like to see in my lifetime, in fact, I would like to see it happen next year, this year, if it was possible. I would like to see Bilalian people not speaking into the problem, speaking in the problem. I'll explain what I mean by speaking into. Most of us that talk about problems we have in our life as Americans, we speak from the outside in. We don't speak in to what is existing. We don't speak from within. Within is what I mean. Right. We speak from without in. Into. Instead of speaking from within into. You see, we should feel that we are a part of this life, whether it's good or bad. I have to identify with the whole life. As long as I feel that I'm black, or I'm Bilalian, or Afro-American, and this thing I'm dealing with, this life and these institutions, are theirs, not very much we can do about it. But once I identify with them, that is, as ownership, in terms of ownership, then I don't approach the problems with the critical eye of an embittered, a hurt person. I approach the problem with a healthy mind, with the strength of my intelligence and my sentiments, as the owner, responsible one, for the problem. Now, I know we are not responsible, but if the problem is ours, we should accept responsibility. You see? So whatever this life has done to us, make us feel disenchanted, disappointed, or whatever, we should face it, and face it with the feeling that this is my life, these are my problems, they were left with us by ancestors, or by their ancestors, they're kept on us by them, but they're my problems. I have to accept responsibility for it. We have great brains among the Bilalian people who are able to help those people who form the system and preserve the system go home and rest peacefully at night. Often they are faced with a problem that won't allow them to get any sleep. They talk to a learned Bilalian woman or Bilalian man and go home and rest well. Because from that Bilalian woman or man, they got the answers that, to the problem they were faced with. You see?
That's right.
And this happens all the time. So we are making contributions, but we are not affecting the form and design of the system. And that's what we should do. We should begin to live from within, speak from within, identify with, from within, accept responsibility for the whole life we call the American life, for its educational process, for the system and processes, for the method of doing things. Don't just accept it because so-and-so wrote it. And he was Dr. So-and-so-and-so. He was a baby too once. And he couldn't talk. He couldn't do anything. He wet his diapers. And he boo-booed on himself. He was just like you. And maybe he was just lucky to get a concept out of the air or from somebody else and whip it together. And at that time, it was the concept that the market was open to. You see? Well, don't give these people too much credit. Don't imagine them to be giants taller than what they are. They're not so tall. If they were so tall, the world wouldn't be in the mess it's in. Everybody today have an opportunity, everybody with a good, brilliant mind, everybody have an opportunity to get in on the ground floor, as they say in industry. This is a new world we're trying to make.
Yes, sir.
The system realizes it's faced with such problems that are of such critical nature that they have to re-evaluate the whole life, whole thing. And you'd be surprised what goes on behind closed doors in secrecy before it reaches us. Now, I guarantee you that there are leaders in our government who are making more serious talk than what I'm making right now. Because the problems are serious. They might be moving backwards and forwards between the alternatives. And those alternatives, if we knew them, might frighten us out of our shoes. The people never know what happened until it happens. So why wait for something like that to happen? If we can contribute, if we can come up with answers, those people who are desperate and underestimate our intelligence to the point that they are afraid to even speak in a sense openly. They're afraid to speak intelligently on serious problems openly because they don't trust the intelligence of the masses. So those people could be convinced by an effort on our part that there's a way to save America and the American life without losing America and the American life. I know that many people are wondering, can we keep America? That is the American life. They're wondering, they're seriously wondering, is it possible for us to retain the American life? It is possible. Our efforts to remove, that is, this community's effort, known by the name Lost Foundation of Islam in America before that name was changed for the name World Community of Islam in the West. Our efforts have remove the effects of slavery through the learning process or the educational process, began with the founder or the first teacher, the one we call Master Farid Muhammad, Master Farid al-Farad, as they read it, Muhammad. Now, he was doing his own thing, that's true. But to do his own thing, he had to face the problem that we're facing right now. He realized that he couldn't give health to the minds of the ignorant masses of the Dalian people that he found in Detroit, four parts of Detroit and Chicago, without first separating them or taking them out of one learning environment and putting them in another. So what he did was isolated us. He isolated us from the American life. Don't go to their places of entertainment. Don't listen to their radio programs. TV wasn't around at that time. Don't listen to their radio programs. Don't read their literature, their publications, their books, their educational books. A complete separation from the American life. Don't speak their language, that is, don't identify with their likes and dislikes. Don't speak their language. Don't observe their holidays. Don't even eat like they do. Eat different. Walk different. Dress different. They eat three meals a day, you eat one. All right, so he changed. He took the people that he was trying to remake for his own work, he took them out of a learning environment so that that learning environment wouldn't affect their lives anymore. Then he put them into his own unique learning environment. And I think we can learn something from his learning environment. We don't have to go to that extreme and separate ourselves from the American life. We don't have to go to the extreme that he went. But there is a need to take yourself out of the old learning environment. Mm-hmm. If the people have little intelligence, then we can't give them great responsibility, can we? All right. Master Prophet Muhammad, we call him Master because that's the term he used. He was a professor of a school in the what we call the old country, and over there they still call the professors Master, Headmaster, Master, etc. And he played on the mystical name, Master, that is the Bible, name for Christ Jesus. He's called Master too, but it means a master teacher. He put his students, and his students, the whole community, then called the Lost Foundation of Islam. We have lessons right today from him, wherein he refers to all the believers as students, and himself as teacher. Says, ask your teacher, learn all about yourself, you see? Well, he referred to himself as a teacher, but now we call ourselves ministers. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a minister, but he didn't consider himself a minister. He called himself teacher. And when he first came, he preferred to call himself Professor Farad. So you see that this man had an interest in the development of education. How do you develop an educational system and design it? So he established the University of Islam. University, you know, university is a big word. It means a group of schools, or colleges, right? More than one college. He called the elementary school that he established the University of Islam. The man was very wise. When you separate people from identifying with one value system or system of values, you have to be careful to make them feel, to not make them feel that they're stepping down. And he knew that. So he called the elementary school university. His school, the whole thing is university. Knowing that some of his students were going to run into some students from the enemy learning environment, And they were going to challenge some of the things that he was teaching, his new world order, right? And he knew that some of his students wouldn't be able to match him. But the feeling of superiority make you feel victorious even when you're defeated. Right? So if some student should challenge one of his students from the other world and should defeat them, they would never admit defeat. They wouldn't see the defeat. They're too superior. This is university. What are you talking about? What school you go to? So he was a very wise man. He knew the problem. He knew how to correct the problems. He knew how to save the people from the problems and put them in a completely new learning environment. And that is exactly the answer, I believe, for us.
Yes.
We don't have to go to that extreme, but we do need to take our roots up out of the old learning environment and plant those roots in a fresh learning environment. And from that fresh learning environment, criticize the old, make it better, and try to save all of its values, all of its real lasting values, all of its gems of knowledge, history, etc., and experience. Save it, but make it conform to that new that will give life to the old. The new should give life to the old. There are people who look way ahead in the future. We are in 1977. They're policymakers right now. Educators. Policymakers right now, they are looking to the year 2000. We are trying to deal with the problems this week. Right? This week. There are people right now looking ahead to see how will the problem look for us in the year 2000. What will the positive things that we have produce for us in the year 2000? What burden will the negative things leave on us in the year 2000? There are persons doing that. How come we don't come into the mind to do the same? Why do we have to sit back and wait for a season to come to do the things we know need to be done out of season? The little squirrel, he's harvesting. And it's not in season. The farmer, he harvested a long time ago. But here the squirrel is, he's gathering acorns, right? Harvest time is fast. Most of the acorns he picked up was dropped down on the ground. He's not looking at the season. Not the season of harvest. He's looking at survival. He knows that there's a sting of winter in the air. And he's going to have to eat while the earth is covered with snow and ice and there's nothing on the tree. He knows at that time he's going to have something to eat. So that little squirrel, he starts collecting these acorns and he bury them, hide them away. So when the winter comes, he eats. Now he is an animal thinking months ahead into the snow and ice before the snow and ice fall. Galileans sit around. They don't even anticipate the season. I'm not criticizing all of you. I'm talking about the general mind that's in our people. Mind that is characteristic of our people. We don't even anticipate the season. Spring is coming. We go on acting like this, that we don't know what's winter coming, spring, and what. What I mean by that, we are not in touch with the revolving cycle of life, of social life, and social needs. If we would watch the seasons, the revolving cycles of social life, political life, the total life of the human being, we would, by experience, by the mere sheer experience of observation, we would be educated. We would get an education. But when you're not observing, the mind is not in tune with it, so it's hard. I remember the courses that I had.